This is Eileen Javier for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and we're here today with Angela Kaufman. She is a licensed clinical social worker, a certified intuitive consultant, a psychic medium, an activist, and an author. What's going on, Angela? How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. So you have dedicated your life to your interest in spirituality and social justice, and you have co-authored 3 books that speak about metaphysical and spiritual topics. But in your new novel, Quiet Men, this is a totally different route. This is a crime drama that explores the damages caused by capitalism and the meat industry and how this affects not only people, animals, but also our environment. What made you want to write Quiet Men?
Well, you're absolutely right. It was a big change from what I'd written in the past. So back in the summer of 2016, I had been vegan at that point for a little over a year. And I read a great book called Slaughterhouse by Gail Eisnitz. And this book that I read was an expose of the slaughter industry. And she talked a lot about the exploitation of workers, not only the horrible things that happened to the non-human animals. And I remember I finished the book, I closed it, and my first thought was, how does everybody not know this? How do I make everybody know this? So in this kind of grandiose way, I had this idea that, like, hey, what if I write a book, but it's fiction, and so people will read it because they want to, you know, go along with the story. But in the process of reading the story, they'll learn about, you know, basically the things I had just learned about the meat industry. And that's not really a new idea. It was something that Upton Sinclair did back in the early 1900s with his book, The Jungle. But I thought, what if I wrote this book and set it in the present day and, you know, let people know that things have actually gotten worse in this industry since Upton Sinclair's book led to the first regulations of the industry, and then we've backslid tremendously since then. And the thought occurred to me to write this story. And I figured, you know, in order for it to have an impact, we've got to have the main character has to be the most bland, boring person you can imagine. And his life has to be so dramatically changed by his work in the slaughterhouse that he ends up committing, you know, a pretty horrific, violent act, but it has to be against a human. So I thought, well, if it's really going to stand out, this can't just be anything. It has to be intense and taboo and horrible. And so in the very beginning of the book, you find out that the protagonist, whose name is Colin, is starting to lose his grip on reality, and he thinks he's still at work. He thinks he's still in the slaughterhouse, but he's actually at home, and he ends up lashing out against his child, and the results are you know, fatal. He ends up killing his son. And then as you read the full story, you come to understand the kinds of things that Colin and his coworkers were exposed to every single day in their work in the slaughter industry. And my hope was that, you know, people would read this and would think to themselves, like, okay, I'm glad this isn't true. And then they get to the end and find out that some of this actually is based on real experiences. And maybe they'd reconsider eating meat, or at the very least, you can't unknow something once you know it. So if someone continues to patronize this industry, at least they would do so knowing what they're supporting.
There are some disturbing things that happen in this story. Was it hard to write these scenes? Why you think it was important to portray these examples of abuse in the book?
Yeah, it was incredibly hard. I mean, like you said, my writing is like, you know, spiritual self-help books. And then, you know, not only to leap to a new genre, but it was very hard because in order to tell the story, I need it to seem real. And I need those scenes to play out in my own head first. And then I need my reader to also enter this world. In order to do it justice, I needed the scenes to seem realistic. But at the same time, I also kind of wanted to protect readers against, you know, like, I don't want to make people feel bad, but in order for this to hit home, you know, we've got to pull the curtain back and expose what goes on. And this is a world that our society intentionally pushes into the background. You know, we take great measures to not see this world. So balancing between doing justice to the reality, but also being sensitive to the reader and wanting to not scare them away so that they'll stick around and keep reading. And as they keep reading, more and more is unraveled. And when all is said and done, there's actually very few scenes in the book that take place in the slaughterhouse, but the scenes that are shown are very intentional. I tried to make them brief in, you know, in comparison to the whole book. And there's a point that is made in each scene. So it's not just gratuitous over-the-top violence, you know, and the attention is that the reader gets into the scene and thinks to themselves, thank God this is just a story because this is really sick. And then they get to the end of the book and read the afterword and learn that these types of depictions are absolutely based on factual occurrences.
So we will be able to know
when you get to the afterword. So when you're reading the story, I mean, it is a novel. So the idea is that, you know, people think they're reading a story that's all made up. When you get to the end, there's an afterword. And in the afterword, I delineate. So for example, the storyline is fiction, including the town, Mosier, North Carolina, that to my knowledge does not exist. The company, Monarch Industries, doesn't exist, but it is based on your standard giant food processing plants like Smithfield and Tyson and those kind of places. The exact characters, for the most part, are fictional. They make reference to the Trump election of 2016. So like those things are reality. And so the storyline is made up, but anytime that there's a scene in a slaughterhouse and there's like really awful things happening, that's based on undercover investigations and things that I've read where people have depicted not only abuse against the animals, but also things like sexual abuse, like really over the top abuse and exploitation of employees, rampant racism, sexism, discrimination against immigrant workers in particular. There's a couple of scenes where the protagonist's attorney, Cam, is trying to understand the nature of slaughter work, and he interviews different people. And so there are some scenes where these characters talk about the history of the slaughter industry, and those are based on factual accounts. I've changed some of the names, but you know, basically anything related to the history of the industry and union busting in the industry, that's all factual. The practices in the industry, including the fact that 1,300 pigs every hour or more are slaughtered every day, that is factual. And in fact, that number is probably higher now because there's been further dysregulation since the book was written. But so those parts are factual.
And how do you hope that Quiet Men change the misconception that people have about slaughter and the meat industry?
Well, there's this idea that there's a humane way to kill anyone, an animal, you know, anyone. And I'm sorry, but we just don't do that. Like, I could beg you right now to take my life and you would never do that. And even if you wanted to, the law wouldn't support you doing that with good reason. So the idea that it's sold to us that these like smiling happy cows or smiling pigs on the lush green pastures, you know, that's what our packaging in this industry tells us. And that's, you know, when you go and buy a burger or pork chops, we have these images of these happy animals and the idea of, you know, humanely raising an animal and then killing them, that there's any reverence in that, that idea is ridiculous. The idea that an animal can be, you know, raised humanely and end up on your plate in a cruelty-free way is absurd. Because even in the best case scenario, even if an animal is treated like royalty, what happens to them between pasture and getting on the plate is hell on earth. And one of the misconceptions is that there's a way to kind of softly kill an animal, and that's not accurate. And also the misconception that slaughter is only cruel for the non-human animals. And this is an industry that actively seeks out and preys upon the most vulnerable people who need work to survive and have few other options. And so I'm hoping that Quiet Man brings people into this very uncomfortable world that we push way out to the outskirts of society and shows them that, you know, in the eyes of these major slaughter operations, the human worker is regarded little better than the pig being sent to slaughter. And even though Quiet Man is fiction, here we are in 2020, and the pandemic has brought this point to the surface at a time when we've basically said, let's sacrifice working people, including slaughterhouse workers, and we get this tiny glimpse of just how poorly their lives are regarded.
Quiet Man brings up so many social problems. How do you think they are connected?
So somewhere in the book, I'll paraphrase, I wrote something to the effect that slaughter is the butt to every universal rule that we're taught since childhood. So we're taught, you know, treat others the way we want to be treated, but all beings are equal, but thou shalt not kill, but. And if we make these exceptions to morality on these one specific occasion, you know, say because it's a non-human animal or because we're harming or exploiting someone who has a different class or rank or doesn't share social or racial privilege, you know, once we make this one exception to these basic rules of morality and these basic rules of not harming others, we open a door. And throughout history, we've seen how people can compel others to do horrible things by using the designation animal to dehumanize and to give someone else the status of other. And this industry is all about othering. It's like warfare. It's like the prison complex. You get to tell yourself that you're better, more worthy, more valid than the person or animal you're interacting with in order to fulfill the duties of your job. If you work in the meat industry, for example, or even if you take part in this industry as a consumer, which is something we all do or have done to some extent. So this is the harsh look in the mirror at how much we really do value our ideals or to what extent we're willing to chip away at them to make these exceptions out of convenience or for profit. And the motive on the high end of the proverbial food chain is huge profit. And on the low end, it's survival. So again, you have slaughter as the most accurate, I think, model of the predatory nature of capitalism and the way that those with fewer choices are forced into the dirtiest and most dangerous and degrading work. So we have this underlying attitude of, I'm up here, you're down there, and I can treat you however I want. And this is the underlying attitude behind racism, classism, misogyny, rape culture, and capitalism, and in the military and prison industrial complex. And it certainly is inherent in our attitude toward non-human animals. And that's represented by the meat industry in this book.
And what role do you think artists, you as a writer, and also more creative people have in creating social change?
I think now a more important role than ever, and like especially the last 4 years have really taught us that, opening the door for a lot of activists and artists to discover that getting your message out isn't just about attending rallies. That we have a number of gifts and can use them all to create change and awareness. And I think the arts in particular, this last year with the pandemic, you know, so many of us being deprived of those experiences of going to theater, going to art galleries and things like that, I think there's a real craving for the humanities and for the arts. And this is a really great moment for artists and creators out there to bring these two worlds of art and activism together.
Where can people buy Quiet Mint?
Currently available mostly online for now. And so there's the standard Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, but I highly recommend and encourage a website called indiebound.org. So it's IndieBound.org. And that's a website where you can enter your zip code and they'll list the independent bookstores in your area that can order the book for you.
Will you be doing a book tour via Zoom? How will that be able to work with the pandemic?
Good question. I am looking for and open to and trying to line up as many ways to get the message out there as possible, but it is going to be virtual. I'm not confident that things are going to be at a level where I'll be back doing in-person book signings and that kind of thing anytime soon, but I'm very happy to share the message. And so I'm looking for opportunities to blog or do podcast interviews like this to help get the word out. And maybe in a couple of years when we're in a better place collectively, there'll be more opportunity for physical tours.
Thank you so much for giving us your time today, Angela.
Oh, thank you so much.